This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hello, hello. I'm Brittany Luce, and you're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, a show about what's going on in culture and why it doesn't happen by accident. Now, today, we're going to take it way back, all the way back to my college days. What is the song you most associate with your college years?
It was Damn by Youngbloods. That was my song. And then when the beat changed and they said, and I'm for sure with it, don't make me pop that truck to the left because I would go get it. And I'm not selfish, I would let you and your steal it. I loved it. I was in the clubs going crazy.
That's Aisha Roscoe. You might know her as one of the hosts of NPR's Weekend Edition, but she's also the editor of a new book of essays called HBCU Made, a celebration of the Black college experience. Aisha, like me, is a graduate of Howard University, a historically Black college or university, also known as an HBCU. And Howard is just one of about 100 HBCUs in the country. Chatting with her about this book was like a mini homecoming. Aisha and I attended Howard around the same time, so we likely went to some of the same parties, knew some of the same people, and we definitely ate at the same dining halls. What was your order on Soul Food Thursday?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I just got the fried chicken. I was into the fried chicken. I would get the hot sauce.
But what size did you get? Did you trust the macaroni and cheese?
I'm not a big size person.
Don't make me hang up. You're not a size person. What does that mean?
Mac and cheese is okay, but I'm not eating that. I'm definitely not eating no greens.
You're from North Carolina?
I'm from North Carolina.
No greens.
Look, no, I don't like the greens.
Now, even though I will never get over the fact that Aisha doesn't like greens, that difference points to the diversity of the Black experience that makes HBCUs so great. I sat down with Aisha to talk about the book of essays, what makes the culture of HBCUs unique, and where we can see their influence on mainstream American culture. Aisha Roscoe, welcome back to It's Been a Minute.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here.
Oh my gosh, it's always a pleasure to speak to a fellow Bison. And Honestly, you being a fellow Bison, a fellow graduate of Howard, was one of the things that made me so excited about joining NPR.
Oh, thank you.
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And I think that kind of speaks to something that we're going to be getting into today, the sort of like enduring tie of HBCUs. Now, college enrollment is down generally and also down among Black students, but there's been a surge of applications at HBCUs specifically. And you and I both went to Howard in the aughts,
yes.
You know, maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Maybe something like that.
So you can call us in a way trendsetters for the next generation.
Okay. Exactly.
You could.
Yes.
When I would tell non-Black people that I was going to Howard, mostly only older people understood the significance.
Yes.
But why do you think HBCUs have gotten so popular, more popular recently?
I mean, I think Beyonce, Homecoming, like I think that was a huge moment.
Coachella, you ready? Let's go get on.
You had her putting her stamp of approval on it. Then you had like Deion Sanders going to Jackson State. And like, when you look at A Different World, the show, which I mean, so many people in my book talk about, they look so cool. They were having so much fun. Like all this stuff. Then you have Kamala Harris, who's also a Howard graduate.
Yes, she is.
You have people talking about this idea of, like, why aren't we supporting our own institutions? I think that played a role in it. So I think a lot of things were coming together at the same time.
Yeah, no, I definitely saw all of that happening in the culture. And also, to your point about questioning why Black people don't support our own organizations as much as maybe we could, it makes me think of like even after June 2020, you know, the so-called racial reckoning.
Yeah,
one of the intra-community conversations that Black people were having amongst ourselves was how we're thinking about HBCUs alongside these predominantly white institutions.
Yes.
Call them PWIs for short. There were a lot of calls in the public for PWIs to get more Black professors and get more Black administrators. But HBCUs were explicitly created for a Black student body and already had many of, you know, people in faculty administration who look like us. So it also, I think, presents as like a strong option to be able to be in a comfortable and supportive educational environment.
I mean, HBCUs are not going to be the fit for every Black person. Mm-hmm. But I think that what HBCUs offer is a place that can be a safe haven. It can be from having to constantly prove your humanity, from having to constantly prove your ability to think and your worth. It's not that you're not challenged, but it's not people looking at you like, well, why are you even here?
Yeah.
How did you get in? Did you sneak in through the back door? I think that does absolutely make a difference.
Yes, 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 yes. As we were preparing to talk to you, our editor, Jessica, who's not a Black woman, but also is a woman of color, had mentioned that as somebody sort of looking from the outside in at HBCU culture, that it raises the importance of affinity spaces for marginalized people. And I thought that that was so interesting because, you know, in some senses, it's been interesting to talk to people who aren't from the HBCU world in getting ready to talk to you because I'm so in it. There are people, in my opinion, goofy people who think about an HBCU as like an institution about excluding non-Black people. To me, that's goofy because like many HBCUs were founded because Black people were excluded from going to other colleges.
And HBCUs have not excluded what, like white people go to HBCUs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Jewish people that would go to medical schools because they were shut out of other, they would go to Black medical schools because they were shut out of other ones. And white people did go to Howard. Like you would see white people there. Like they were, they're always allowed. You know, it was like they were always allowed.
Exactly. The difference is there were literal schools, Ivy League.
Didn't allow us.
Ivy League that y'all love so much that were literally saying, don't come, you can't come in. People of all ethnicities and all racial backgrounds are allowed to come to Howard.
Allowed.
And there are some HBCUs that over time
have
become, you know, I have a majority white or a sizable white student body. But I have been thinking about how remarkable and incredible it is that HBCUs are a space that began as the product of exclusion. And over time, they've become, as opposed to the place that you have to go because you can't go someplace else, you're not allowed to be someplace else. They have become, in some many senses always were, a safe space that one chooses to be in. And HBCUs now have their own culture and ways that the mainstream culture has to recognize. I think that's so interesting.
I think it's amazing. And then you see, I mean, look, even Angelina Jolie's daughter, Zahara, she's now at Spelman. She just crossed as an AKA. You can see that people are looking at HBCUs not as just like a place you have to go, but a place where a lot of people choose to go.
One of the biggest misconceptions I have found when talking to other people about HBCUs is that people think that they're not diverse. They think, oh, all Black people are there, so it's not a diverse environment. Which, when you say that, you're telling on yourself, by the way, because you're saying that you think all Black people are the same. So I just want to put that out there. But my experience at Howard was, it was just one of the most diverse environments I've ever been in. And I live in New York City. Like, I had classmates from all over the country, around the world, all shades, faiths, cultures, speaking different languages. Yeah. I had a very specific experience being at Howard in DC, which is a very international city. Yeah. So it may have been different at a smaller school or something. But like the international students actually had a big impact on the culture of the university.
Oh, absolutely.
And I remember attending like a, I don't remember the name of it. It might have been like the Miss Face of Africa pageant or something like that. But there were enough African students from the U.S. and also from the continent, where there was a woman representing I think each country or various countries. But it was like so amazing to see everybody like put on for their country in that way where I was just sitting here and I'm like, wow. And as a result, I had a lot of really incredible intra-racial conversations that really just expanded my understanding of just how varied Black people's experiences are. I wonder, like, do you have a memory from your time at Howard that kind of just like broke your brain in terms of understanding how diverse the Black experience is?
To me, like coming from Durham, North Carolina, then going to Howard, you know, seeing Black people from all over the country, you know, waving different flags, doing different dances. I mean, even dance hall was new to me. I didn't know about it. Well, shoot, I didn't know about go-go. I didn't, you know, it was all different to me. So seeing all of that, I'm like, okay, there's a lot of different type of Black people. And like the way people interacted with their Blackness was interesting. And it taught me a lot. Like Black people come in all different viewpoints. I remember there was a protest. George Bush W. Bush came to the campus.
I might have been there.
So he came to the campus, but they didn't tell us he was coming.
Yes, I remember.
Because they knew people would be upset. This protest and everything. And then a Washington Post person, he wrote a column about it, but it was a Black man. He wrote a column about
it. Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about. I know exactly who you're talking about. I didn't want to give the name.
I understand.
But he said that Howard students were protesting because they couldn't get to their chicken.
I remember it.
Because it was Soul Food Thursday. And he said they couldn't get to their chicken.
I remember.
And so obviously, as you know, Howard Seuss, we were offended. I remember talking about it in class, and there was this girl in the class who was like, well, I don't understand why everybody's so upset, because Black people do like chicken. And I was like, oh, there are a lot of different types of Black people. I will never forget. I was just like, there are all sorts of people here. I did.
Aisha, I appreciate that. That was the moment.
That was the moment.
And you said, oh my gosh.
I'm like, there are all kinds of Black people.
Oh my gosh. That is a beautiful, beautiful. I remember, I think I got put off of sociology as a minor because I went to a 100 level sociology class. And somebody said something about how after Hurricane Katrina, she said that she prayed a rosary for the people who are suffering, but then after that, that they should just get it together. I said, you know what? That is so interesting. That is such an interesting thought. But I mean, I will say there were times where I was completely stymied by something ridiculous that somebody had said, and I was really sitting there almost ready to pull my eyelashes out, like, God, why did you place me here? But there were also so many moments where that would create a dialogue in thinking about that and thinking about the diversity within, you know, the Black experience that one could be exposed to at HBCU. There's also like another side of that. I have this theory that when you control for one identity among a group of people, like as in how HBCUs for the most part control for race, all the other intersecting identities can become more pronounced. And in some ways that can be freeing. Like I remember when I went to Howard, how much I enjoyed identifying as a Midwesterner, as a person from Michigan. I was just like, oh, and like, or identifying as like a reformed, recovering theater kid. Like, it was just like, oh, that's like a nice quirk about my personality that I hadn't been able to use previously to define myself because I was around a lot of white kids a lot of the time. Yeah. And so it was like, I was one of a few Black girls around, and that was kind of the thing. And so I think it can be a source of pride, but also another thing that I remember from my HBCU experience is things like misogyny, colorism, classism, homophobia, way more pronounced. I didn't have the experience at home of dealing with a lot of patriarchy. Going to Howard was a big wake-up call for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had all the patriarchy at home.
Yeah. So I didn't really have it so much. So I went to Howard. I was like, oh, it was like leaving one environment. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not the Black girl here, but I am definitely a woman, and that means something. It was like once that sort of like the Black question was off the table,
this other stuff was all way more pronounced for me. Yeah. And that also came up in some of the essays in your book as well. Talk to me about how you and some of the other writers that are featured in your book experienced those isms in your HBCU experiences.
One thing, and I think because I am a journalist, I didn't want it to be a puff piece. I wanted it to be a love letter, but with the understanding that love can be complicated. You can love someone enough to be critical of them because you want them to be better. And so you have people like Michael Arsenault, who also went to Howard, New York Times bestselling author, who's a gay Black man, who talks about how he dealt with homophobia at Howard. And I really wanted that perspective to be there because that's also a part of the Black experience, but it's a part of the Black experience that has not always been embraced. And, you know, Nicole Perkins, who went to Dillard, she's an author and poet, and she talks about some of the respectability stuff. I think the respectability thing is, it was people telling you this is what you need to do, right, to get by in the world. Thankfully, I'm glad that people have challenged that status quo.
Yes.
And then don't even get into the sexual politics that was, you know, of this girl's fast, this girl's a hoe, this you know.
Oh, my gosh, And then and none of it stuck to the guys. And it was interesting reading Nicole's chapter of the book because, you know, she went to Dillard, which is an HBCU in New Orleans, and she was talking about how kind of retrograde it was that the women who lived in the dorms had a curfew that was earlier than the men. Many HBCUs have some type of curfew policy. Yeah. Not Howard, at least when I was there, it didn't mean that I had to be back in the dorm by a certain time, but you couldn't have anybody of the opposite gender in your room. So people would be trying to sneak people in. Did I hop a fence?
You hopped a fence?
May 2006.
What?
I hopped a fence to get into Carver Hall.
Carver? Oh, yes. My goodness.
Which was a men's dorm back in the day, for y'all who don't know. I hopped a fence to break into Carver Hall. Do you know what I had on my feet? Do you know the youth, the knees? I was wearing Birkenstock clogs, Aisha. Climbed a chain link fence.
Was it worth it?
This is how desperate they had us because we had these curfews. So we were doing.
They always talked about like some girl tried to sneak into Drew, which was the freshman male.
The freshman boys. Oh my God! Don't be caught there because it was a bad place to be.
Oh, it was a bad thing.
Because then you're seen as
too fast.
Too fast. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Someone tried to sneak in a suitcase or something. That's what someone said.
I remember that rumor about the suitcase. Yes.
The suitcase.
She had to be tiny. Poor girl had to be teeny tiny. Yeah. Anyway, we were talking about respectability politics and the various isms at HBCUs, be it sexism, homophobia. And I'm glad you got into all that in your book. And yet, you know, these things aren't occurring in a vacuum. You know, these isms were present because they mirror the outside world.
Not to be too cheesy, but I think oftentimes you have HBCUs, the students there press to bring the institutions forward. You know, at Howard, there's a very real history of student protests and student activism. And it was the students who forced the creation of an African-American studies department and African-American history courses.
Someone who attends an HBCU could have the benefit of, like you said, being able to learn in an environment not completely free of all of the isms in the world, but free of that specific kind of weight. And speaking for myself, I don't think that I would have been able to do this job or be as confident as a grown person. I don't know if I'd understand as much about the world as I do if I had gone to college in a different environment. But I also think about, there's a big historical weight for many Black people to attending college. You know, maybe when your parents or grandparents wouldn't have had the opportunity to get an education at all. On my dad's side, both of his parents are HBCU grads. They both went to Russ College, where they met in Mississippi. But on my mother's side, you know, one of her parents didn't finish elementary school and the other one finished at eighth grade because a lot of people had to work, or, you know, families didn't have money for college or went into the service or whatnot. Growing up, when I didn't feel like doing my homework or something like that when I was like in elementary school. I don't know if this ever happened to you. You wrote about yourself as being a really perfect student all through school. But like my parents would reference like Roots and, you know, be like, the slaves had their fingers chopped off for learning how to read, which is dramatic. And I think back and I'm like, oh my God, like that's a lot to put on somebody in third grade. Yes. But it's true, you know, and yeah. In some ways as an adult, I'm like, I'm glad they told me that because it's important that I knew that. And there's no reason to hide that from me, right? But with all of that understanding and history of the meaning and the weight of college at a PWI, not everybody's coming in the door with that experience or with the knowledge of that experience.
Yeah, I think it's a shared, like, even though Black people are not monolithic, there are certain shared dynamics where I think you don't have to explain why this is a big deal.
As we discussed, HBCUs have a particular culture. And we talked about where we see that in Beachella, yes. Little throwback, Stomp the Yard, A Different yes. World, and of course the many, many, many HBCU alumni, Kamala Harris, Toni mm-hmm. Morrison, Spike Lee, Taraji yes. P. Henson, yes. for those who are not familiar. What does that influence mean? What is the impact of the influence of HBCU culture and HBCU graduates on the greater culture, the wider culture?
Well, I think that you can see it in those places, just like you said, where it's so clear, like music, clothes, fashion. But then it's also just like, I think it's in those alumni who go out and make such a huge mark on the world. You know, I'm blessed to have Oprah Winfrey's in the book, mm-hmm. and she's a graduate of Tennessee State. She talks about how it was a professor at Tennessee State who convinced her father to let her take her first TV job. The rest is obviously history with Oprah Winfrey. So you think about that sort of training and like how that person's been able to affect the world. I think that it's an impact that we don't always see mm-hmm. because it's just, you know, throughout, you know, you'll see like Melanie Parker, who is over diversity at Google. Yep. She's a Hampton graduate. Like, mm-hmm. it's like you don't even always see and know that this is where that person got their training. This is where that person learned this or got this experience or took this turn. But we see the impact of it. And you can hear a Brittany Luce. And you can hear an Aisha Roscoe. Sure. And we, you know, and we are HBCU made. You
and see what and I'm a saying? B.A. Parker now. And a B.A.
And,
Parker.
And a B.A. Parker. You know, like, and you hear all of these people. And all of us have come through this very rich history that is HBCU. But it's not just history. It's also present day.
Yes, 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 yes. So we got a little game for you. Do you have a couple minutes to stick around?
Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready to play.
Coming up, Aisha and I play a little HBCU trivia. Stick around.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing, backpacking, and another outdoor thing that rhymes with backpacking. Visit your local REI co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways you can opt outside.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so this is a game of HBCU trivia. I have a few questions here to ask you, and you got to get them right. If you don't get them right, then Oprah's going to call you. She's gonna give you a talking to.
Oh, my goodness. Ooh, I don't know about this. I might not get these right.
Don't let Oprah down. Don't let her down. Okay. All right. First question. What percentage of Black judges in the United States attended an HBCU? Is it A, 30%, B, 50%, C, 70%, or D, 80%?
Okay, I think I've given out this quote, but I'm really bad with numbers. So I think it's 70%. It's a whole lot of judges went to HBCUs.
You're going with 70. You are right. It is a whole lot, but it's actually D. 80%. You was up there. You were up there.
That's what I was thinking. Was it 70 or 80? It's a whole lot.
80%. Isn't that wild?
80%. That is crazy. Yes.
All right. Next question. Which state has the most HBCUs in the country? A, Georgia. Mm-hmm. B, Florida. C, mm-hmm. Alabama. Or D, Texas.
I thought it was North Carolina because we got a whole bunch of them. They ain't even one of the choices.
That was actually my thought, too.
I'm already off track on this one. I'm going to say Georgia, but that may not be right. Georgia. Georgia.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I'm texting Oprah right now. The answer was actually C, Alabama.
Alabama. Wow. Okay. I should have known
yes,
that.
Yes. Alabama has 15 HBCUs.
Oh, my goodness. I did not know that. I really thought it was North Carolina because we got a whole bunch.
North Carolina is like New Jersey. You drive 2 feet, it's a new college.
Exactly.
One last question. Which school's majorette dance team inspired Beachella's choreography?
I think it's the Dancing Dolls because they have like their whole thing and it's all about the Dancing Dolls. And I also have a Dancing Doll, one of the originals in the book. I think it was the Dancing Dolls.
Ding, 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 ding.
I finally got one.
You are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. It was the Dancing Dolls of Southern University. If you watch a good amount of Beyonce choreography, you will see Dancing Dolls 8 counts for sure, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
And actually, I believe one of the choreographers that she was working with, or at least one of the people that was actually in the performance, was a dancing doll herself. So there we go. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Look, Aisha, you got one.
Yeah.
And I think
I got one.
You got one. And for that reason, plus the beautiful book that you edited and that wonderful essay that you wrote, I will let it slide. I will not call Oprah on you.
Okay, please okay? don't. Please don't.
I won't. I will not call Oprah on you. I pray that the only time she calls you is to sit in her backyard and she can ask you questions.
I know.
About
that
why
would
you're
be so
successful.
Nice.
Aisha, thank you so much. This has been so much fun to walk down HBCU memory lane with you today.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. I've had so much fun.
Thanks again to Aisha Roscoe. You can hear her on NPR's Weekend Edition, and her book, HBCU Made, is out now. This episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by
Liam McBain.
This episode was edited by
Jessica Plachek.
Our executive producer is
Verilyn Williams.
Our VP of programming is
Yolanda Sanguini.
All right, that's all for this episode of It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Brittany Luce. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. This message comes from Charles Schwab. When it comes to managing your wealth, Schwab gives you more choices, like full-service wealth management and advice when you need it. You can also invest on your own and trade on thinkorswim. Visit schwab.com to learn more.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.